This is Common Ground, a program on world affairs and the people who shape events. This week, U.S. immigration. Too much, or what we're all about.
America's close of America is immigrants. So to lose it, and it was a disaster.
American people recently, and now a poll shows that most of them believe that immigration has been good, but no longer is, because conditions have changed, and they're well ahead of Congress. So the idea, therefore, that immigration has helped the country cannot be denied. The fact that immigration will continue to help the country must be denied.
Common Ground is produced by the Stanley Foundation. I'm Mary Gray Davidson. You hear it all the time. People find a place they want to settle, and then they say, now it's time to close the door to newcomers, or the place will be ruined. Where do we draw the line on immigration? That the U.S. as we know it was built by immigrants is indisputable. How many more people the U.S. should let in is the subject of a big debate. Not a new one by any means, but one that's currently a hot-button issue. Today, we'll talk to some of the people involved in that debate, with recent immigrants and those directly working on reforming our immigration laws. Our journey begins in that most familiar gateway city to the United States, New York, where more than a quarter of the population, even today, is foreign-born. This is the Lower East Side Tenement Museum. In the 19th century, this building was where many new arrivals began their lives in this country. Today, the museum and the Mayor's Office for Immigrant Affairs are hosting an exhibition of immigrant artists called Hopes and Dreams. Ruth Abram, president of the museum, and Virginia Key of the Chinese American Planning Council are working together to make the connections between America's immigrant past and present-day immigration.
Virginia Key and her work is representing and working today with America's newest immigrant population on the Lower East Side. And they are facing over and over so many of the same issues that 19th and early 20th century immigrants faced before.
Virginia, what about the fears that immigrants are going to take jobs away from Americans who are born here?
You know, this is a global economy. This is a global economy. You work for IBM and you want to go into Asian country. How are you going to sell the product if you don't use the cultural know-how of an Asian? If you want to go to Italy to begin, or to perhaps the Ukraine, to have joint partnership, how are you going to do that? We are in some ways, so narrow that we can only speak English, and we can only, we can only export fast food to other countries. I mean, we have a lot more than just fast food and soft drink.
That's a good point, and here's a historic perspective. One of the first interpreted apartments we're opening at the museum is the apartment of a German family that's there in 1870s. Well, by 1870s, the Lower East Side is called Kleine Deutschland, and just as today, when you walk through many parts of Lower Manhattan and you see all the signages in Chinese and businesses conducted in Chinese, and the words on the street are Chinese, in 1870, the same was true of Germans. Well, Americans who were here in 1870 and were, say, the third generation and who had completely forgotten that we were immigrants, looked at this German migration, which was at that point the largest foreign language migration we had ever sustained, and we trembled. We said, if this keeps up, they'll Germanize America. We'll all be speaking and reading and writing, God forbid, voting in German. They're very, very clannish, keep to themselves, will never, never assimilate. And do you know what they do to their youngest children, we said? Well, they take them from their mother's breasts when they're but five and put them for the day in a place they call kindergarten. So, you know, it's cyclical, and the very issues facing the Chinese-American community now have faced successive waves of earlier communities, and it's very important to remember how frightened we once were of something we're no longer frightened of.
22 artists are exhibiting here. All are people who've uprooted themselves from their countries of origin and now call the U.S. home. Nina Usheva Green, a painter, left her Russian homeland 19 years ago. Nina, have you been back to Russia since you left?
Yes, I've been there 88, and it was a very painful experience. Very painful. But I still have. Because I'm an American. I love Russia with all my heart. But I'm an American. I'm Russian-American. That's the story.
One reason I'm doing these interviews for the radio program is because polls show that recently more Americans are wanting to restrict the immigration of foreigners into the United States. What do you think that would do to the U.S.?
I think that this America's close of America is immigrants. So to lose it, it will be a disaster. And an American spirit, and an American culture, and American spirit itself, national spirit of America. What is it if it's not an immigrant spirit from all nation of the world? So it's impossible.
About 600,000 immigrants enter the U.S. legally each year. It's not known how many enter illegally. Maybe another 300,000 annually, according to the INS. Earlier this century, the majority of immigrants came from Europe. Today's newcomers are mostly from Latin America, the Caribbean, and Asia. The reasons for leaving home are as varied as the immigrants themselves, but many come to the U.S. in hopes of economic prosperity. For the past century, immigrants to New York have often wound up working in that city's famous garment district. Mustafar Chisti is the director of the Immigration Project for the International Ladies Garment Workers Union.
Well, you know, the union was founded like 100 years ago and was founded by immigrants, people who came from Europe, principally from Russia or southern Europe, and essentially has been sustained by every new wave of immigrants, both in terms of people who went starting businesses and the labor force that went into the industry. So immigration as an issue for the union is as old as its founding. Our perception is that immigrants are by and large not displacing American workers or affecting American labor standards, that we believe that new immigrant workers are doing exactly the kind of jobs that prior waves of immigrants did. For us, mostly, I think for us, it's a replacement of one way by the other, not necessarily a displacement one.
Do you have any opinions on why you think people are focusing on immigration at this moment?
In various chapters of our history, we have been restrictionist and open. And the restrictionism does generate at a time when we are going through a bad economic period. And we're clearly in a world recession. And when things are not going too well in the economy, people always are eager to find scapegoats. Immigrants are providing to be a very convenient scapegoats in the present period. Our immigration is not out of control. I mean, we have a reasonably controlled immigration policy. We let in certain number of people on a certain criteria, and most of it is family driven, some is employment needs. And as long as those numbers are reasonable, I think immigration continues to be a very valuable asset for this country.
We move from the lobby of this factory, whose workers are represented by the ILGWU, onto the factory floor. Some 70 women are at work cutting and sewing for the Lady Lynn Lingerie Company. Owner Steve Arnoff says anywhere from a third to half his workers are foreign-born. Mustafa Chisti says the ILGWU represents some 800 factories, most of them small, like this one. He says workers in an individual factory often come from the same ethnic group, depending on the latest wave of immigration. For example, Chisti says there were only 9 shops in Chinatown represented by the ILGWU in 1960. Today, there are 500. This growth, he says, would not have been possible without immigrants.
It's absolutely clear that a garment industry in New York would have been dead without Native immigrants. It's not only just because of their skills that they bring from traditional societies. I mean, we don't teach people how to sew in this country any longer. People grow up in this country learning how to type. They don't grow up learning how to sew. So in the past, people taught these things. An aunt taught it to her niece sitting next to her. It's always been done by people themselves. Our government does not get involved in training people. And they're coming and building the enterprise of America. The fact that we have been experiencing tremendous pressures from the international trade, probably one of the significant reasons why, given that competition, New York apparel industry has survived, is because we have gotten skilled immigrants to do the work that Americans just no longer are trained to do.
While many immigrants are seeking economic opportunities and often leaving desperate living conditions, others fear for their lives if they remain in their own country. They are called refugees, and the UN High Commission for Refugees estimates there are 17 million people around the world who have left their home countries afraid to return. If these refugees wind up in the U.S. and the government believes they have a well-founded fear of persecution back home, they may be granted what's called asylum. But it's often difficult for the government to determine who exactly should be granted political asylum, whether that person would truly face persecution back home, or is perhaps just another economic migrant from a less developed country. Arthur Helton directs the Refugee Project for the Lawyers Committee for Human Rights, which provides free legal services to refugees they believe have valid claims for asylum. You know, there have been a string of cases reported on in the media lately about immigrants to the U.S., whether they're legal or illegal. I'm thinking, for example, of the alleged Pakistani gunman outside of CIA headquarters or some of the people involved in the World Trade Center bombing, and then 60 Minutes, of course, did that report on how easy it is to claim asylum when they arrive at Kennedy International Airport. What can be done? And is it as easy as it appears to just come in and claim asylum and then you go off free into the U.S.?
Well, under certain circumstances, it can be quite easy and inviting to those who would lodge spurious claims in order to gain entry. In other circumstances, it's very difficult and terribly hard for genuine refugees to present claims for protection, for example, Haitian boat people who are summarily intercepted and returned on the high seas at this point in time. So you have a system that is essentially a non-system and a policy that is largely a non-policy. It is animated by ad hoc responses to perceived emergencies and notorious incidents such as the World Trade Center bombing or other events that cause politicians to try for the quick fix in terms of regaining control over the borders. The problem, of course, is that it is a system in need of greater discipline, both our general immigration system in terms of enforcement relative to undocumented people, as well as the asylum system. But it should not be reformed in a way that puts at risk the rights of genuine refugees. And that is another important aspect of our work, trying to continue to voice the concerns of genuine refugees in this reform process.
Do you feel that the U.S. has a special obligation toward people who are fleeing persecution?
I do. It is not only a general tradition as a country of immigration, but also a legal obligation. The United States is one of 121 nations that have become party to an international treaty regime that forbids the return of a refugee to a place where he or she may experience persecution. In that sense, we have a legal as well as a moral obligation to protect refugees.
And do you feel that the U.S. is still capable of filling the role that it's had over the past couple hundred years of being a haven for newcomers and for those who are fleeing oppression or economic hardship?
I do. I think the United States government certainly has a duty to regulate immigration and protect its citizenry, including taking into account labor market impacts, family unity, diversity, and other issues that are currently involved in U.S. immigration policy. But we should not forget, and indeed should remain open, to those genuine refugees who are fleeing persecution and provide a place of haven for them.
Helton's Refugee Project has just taken on a client from the People's Republic of China. This young artist, who wishes not to be identified, was invited to teach at a small Midwestern college for 1 year. His visa will expire soon, and he's afraid to return to China. That's because he drew a portrait while here in the States, implying that the Chinese government lies to the people.
This kind of thing, you know, like if it happened in America, I think it's not a big deal, you know. The people can make a joke with the president, but if you make a joke with the president in China, you die, you know. It's very dangerous. But for me, I think this picture is really bring a big problem for me.
Arthur Helton believes this young man has a compelling case for receiving political asylum.
His political views, in part inspired by the tragedy in Tiananmen Square, led him to express his artistic and philosophical and political views in the course of his studies here by painting a picture that I'm sure the Chinese authorities would regard as treasonous.
You're listening to Common Ground, a service of the Stanley Foundation. Our topic is U.S. immigration. The Stanley Foundation is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that conducts a wide range of programs meant to provoke thought and encourage dialogue on world affairs. It's not an easy time for immigrants wanting to come to the U.S. Legal and illegal immigration are approaching historic highs. There are studies claiming immigrants use up a lot more public money for things like education and welfare than they ever put in. And with an economic recession, polls are showing more and more Americans want to limit immigration. One lobbying group seeking to reduce immigration is the Federation for American Immigration Reform, or FAIR. Ed Levy is a member of FAIR's Board of Advisors.
At the present time, the United States population is projected to double within 60 or at the most 90 years. We have water problems in various parts of the countries. We have air problems in almost all parts of the countries, including Denver and Phoenix. We have soil erosion that is very, very great. And at the same time, we're adding population, which means that more and more of the land is going to be covered over, either with houses or with roads or with shopping malls. And we're going to have less and less of the resources that we require for life. So immigration has to be considered part of the population growth. People tend to think that it's all based upon what group of people do you want in. FAIR does not take that at all. All of us believe that it is a population growth problem, and immigration accounts for at least 50% of our present population growth. Therefore, immigration has to be curtailed so that we can then come to some kind of understanding about what we want in terms of population. At the moment, the Congress has been listening to ethnic lobbies. And all those ethnic lobbies believe only in, can I protect myself? Can I protect the Irish? Can I protect the Russian Jews? Can I protect the Armenians? Can I protect the Cambodians? Whatever the group has to be, we're arguing for that group. What FAIR is saying, let's try to see what's good for the United States, what's good for the American people. The American people recently, and now a poll shows that most of them believe that immigration has been good, but no longer is, because conditions have changed, and they're well ahead of Congress. So the idea, therefore, that immigration has helped the country cannot be denied. The fact that immigration will continue to help the country must be denied.
some of your arguments sound rather familiar when you look back at the history of immigration. With each great wave of immigration into this country, there have been people who say we've got to limit it. Why is it different now? What's going on?
In terms of the world population, we have 5.5 billion people, and a projected doubling time varies, but the amount of doubling time is going to be very, very great. The bulk of that growth is going to be in the third world countries who cannot sustain their populations now. So that you will have more and more people who are running away as economic refugees, who are running away as environmental refugees because the ecology is being destroyed, and who are running away from governments that can no longer cope. Under those conditions, the pressures on the developed world to take more and more refugees are going to be increasingly great unless we manage to convince the third world that population limitations are important. So the situation is different. But there's a very interesting point. If I tell you that you're going to fall off a cliff somewhere walking in that direction, and you say to me, how far away is that cliff? And I say, oh, about 10 yards. And you get walk 10 yards and 20 yards and 30 yards, you just haven't fallen. You say, hey, he's wrong. Walk another 20 yards and you'll fall off the cliff. Anybody who makes a particular statement saying that something's going to go wrong is making a stupid error by saying by the year 1995 something's going to go wrong. We don't know that. All we know is that if situation is bad now, if we continue the present trend, it's going to get worse. When the thing is going to suddenly break and when riots in the streets are going to become common, nobody can tell. But the ethnic stress, the riots in the streets are becoming greater, and the entry-level jobs are becoming more and more difficult to get. All of those things are increasing. All of that has changed. We no longer need illiterate people. What we need are people to be trained from our own. In addition to which, our social conscience has changed. We didn't care for a while how many people were poor. So our consciousness of we owe a debt to our underprivileged, and we owe them the opportunity to get into the mainstream. That's going to be destroyed if population growth continues, and particularly if immigration continues.
What kind of specific policy proposals is FAIR making as far as immigration?
The particular program nationally is this. We've come to recognize that the admission of refugees is absolutely essential, but as long as refugee abuse goes on, asylum abuse goes on, people are going to hate all refugees. So the first thing is get rid of a refugee and asylum fraud. So the first thing is legitimate refugees and then the nuclear family. At the moment, we are coming in on the basis of what they call family reunification. But it's not family reunification. The nuclear family of father, mother, and dependent children is the family unification that should be regarded. When you start bringing in extended families, you're bringing in people with low skills, low education, and you are adversely affecting the economic welfare here. If we want to bring in specific people at a skilled level, that's one thing. Then we can enhance our economy. But if we bring in too many, we don't train our own. So limited immigration has to be very few people come in without skills. Secondly, thirdly, I suppose, the FAIR has recognized that the ethnic lobbies are all arguing for each other. The only fair way that we can do this is by asking for a moratorium on all other immigration for a limited period of time, 3 years, 5 years, whatever it is, until such time as Congress establishes a population policy, establishes some way of saying how many immigrants do we need, what rate do we want immigrants to come in.
The ambivalence of Americans toward newcomers is nothing new. During the course of the past century, the federal government has made several revisions to its immigration policy. For the next few years, a federal commission on immigration reform will be studying the issue and come up with final recommendations by 1997. Michael Teitelbaum, vice chairman of the Bipartisan Commission, cites several causes for this latest round of immigration anxiety.
One is the economy has turned down, and particularly in California, it's turned down. That's been the state that has been most heavily promoting the unlawful migration of large numbers of people. At least some of the political leaders in California have been of that view. Second has been the disturbing appearance of mass violence in Europe, aimed against perfectly peaceful foreigners, so-called, living many of them for many years. And that's been a shocker to many people. And the third is the collapse of the Warsaw Pact and the Soviet Union, and a kind of specter of millions of people footloose, potentially migrating uncontrollably westward.
Now, in 1986, there was the Immigration Reform and Control Act. Is this a continuation of that, or was that not successful enough so that immigration is continuing to be looked into?
The 1986 Act was intended principally to reduce the attraction of the American labor market for unlawful migrants crossing the border. The 1990 Immigration Act was focused on legal immigration reform, and the commission is charged with dealing with both kinds of immigration, as well as refugee migration, which is the third category.
Well, is it possible for you to get a handle on whether immigration is a drain or an asset to the American economy?
We'll try.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I can promise. I don't think we have an answer as a commission to that set of questions right now, but we're going to do our best to come up with a sensible set of answers.
And is that going to be one of the factors that determine your recommendations?
Well, yes, we are charged with assessing the impacts of immigration on the U.S. economy, on the labor force, on the society in general, and we'll try to come to a balanced view of that.
This country was built by immigrants. Are we looking at the possibility that America will no longer be the great melting pot?
Well, some people have always been opposed to the notion of the United States as a melting pot. They say that we never melted, and some people describe it as a mosaic, others as a lumpy stew. So there's a lot of value judgments to be made about this, and the commission is probably not going to make those kinds of value judgments. But the only thing I'll say about that is that American legal immigration was completely unlimited numerically until the period around World War I. And then it was sharply constrained numerically.
And then we had country quotas, right, after World War
I? Yes, that's right. The national origins quota system was brought into play at that time, and it was a system designed in a way that did not appeal to me, I must say, but the intentions of the designers of that program were to maintain the ethnic composition of the United States roughly at what it had been at about that time, rather than see major transformations of that composition driven by immigration. And so comparisons with the past immigration to the United States have to take into account that it hasn't been unlimited immigration since 1920 or so.
And so, just as it has since early this century, the debate about immigration and what this country is all about will go on. I'm Mary Gray Davidson. If you'd like to order a printed transcript or audio cassette of this Common Ground program, you can contact Journal Graphics at 1-800-824-5746. Ask for program number 9423. If you'd like more information about the Stanley Foundation, or you have some comments about the program, please write to us at 216 Sycamore Street, Muscatine, Iowa. The zip code is 52761. Again, for credit card orders of transcripts or tapes, please call Journal Graphics at 1-800-825-5746. Our theme music was created by B.J. Lederman. Common Ground was produced and funded by the Stanley Foundation.